Hey, welcome to the Listen Bitch podcast, your go-to destination for unlocking your full potential and embracing the extraordinary possibilities within you. This is a journey of self-discovery and empowerment as you explore that transformative power of stepping into greatness. I want you to come into alignment with your God-given power and your gifts, unleash your soul, and learn to co-create a life that you love. As you become the writer of your own destiny, in this podcast, you're going to find that inspiration, the practical tips, and sometimes abrasive nudge to take the leap of faith towards your dreams. You're in the right place. Buckle up so we can unleash your inner badass. You guys, I'm excited today. I'm bringing on Josh. I know words, you guys. Josh Hatcher. He is the podcast host of Manlyhood. He is a poet and author, a father and a grandfather. And I think father and grandfather probably take up most of the time. I know how that is. And I love that for you. So, Josh, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your podcast?
Yeah. So the father takes up a lot less time now. My youngest daughter just got married on Saturday. So,
oh, congrats.
Yeah. I got to walk her down the aisle and hand her off to a wonderful young man who is taking good care of her. So
nice.
And she takes good care of him too. It's not like it's, you know, I mean, it is 24, right? But he's real good to her. And, I'm honored to call him my son. So, but yeah, so, life is good. And, so about 11 years ago, I had one of those, crisis moments. I had my own marketing, business. I call it that, but really what I had was just a mess.
Okay.
I had, some web hosting clients where I had built websites for them, and I was, managing their websites. All of the sites all at once got hit by like Palestinian Liberation Army hackers, and all the websites got taken down with like Free Palestine banners, and all at once, and just like taken off offline, and like I had backups, but like some of the backups were like months old, and some of these websites I had just spent months working on. Right. And so like I had just done, that meant like months worth of work gone. And and we were broke. Right. I mean, we were homeschooling our four kids at home. We were, my wife was home taking care of them. You know, she wasn't working. Yeah. A full-time job. I think she was like cleaning houses part-time. So like I would like take a break from working from home to take care of them for a little bit, to oversee like lunchtime and a couple hours of their schooling while Zoe would go out and clean houses. And I wasn't doing a good job with that. And then I would go back to work when she would get home. And then I would literally just like work until 3 a.m, 4 a.m. I'd go to sleep. I'd get up at 10 o'clock groggy, and I would just literally roll out of bed, go downstairs, get a Pop-Tart, and then sit in the chair next to the bed and just work until 3 or 4 a.m. You know what I mean? And I'd come downstairs and eat, and I'd growl at the kids, and I would just treat my wife like crap because I like my life was a mess because, you know, I didn't take care of myself. I'd gained a bunch of weight. I had, I wasn't making any money, and I was stressed because everything had gone wrong, you know, those times like I'm in a little bit of one of those right now where everything keeps going wrong. It just happens. Life happens to you sometimes.
Yep.
And like, well, what was happening is instead of taking charge of it, I was taking it out on my family, and I didn't like who I was. Yep. Right. I wasn't taking control of things. And I was rude. I was disrespectful. I wasn't there. Wasn't present. And my wife came upstairs, and at the time she's a pastor now, but then she was a Sunday school teacher. Mm-hmm. And she comes upstairs and she said, I promised you that I'd be married to you forever. Mm-hmm. But did you have to make it so damn hard? And when my wife starts cussing, the Sunday school teacher starts cussing, you know, you're in trouble. And it just cut me to the bone. You know, and I'm like, man, this, I don't know what to do. I just had that crisis moment where I'm like, I have to change. And so I pulled out my little brown leather journal, and I just started writing down, like, what do I know is true? Mm-hmm. Who am I? what am I here to do? Like, what am I meant to do? And like, that was, I think, the start of that process of like refocusing my life and figuring out, where am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to be making sense of? Because so many men, especially, and I know women have this struggle too. Like, this is not unique to men, but as a man, I understand it. Right. And as a man, I know how men feel, you know, and especially today, I don't like the idea of telling women how they should feel. Like, I can't do that.
Right.
You know? And so I'm trying to approach it from that perspective of, I know what men are going through, and I want to try to help men walk out of it. You know, Thoreau talks about men leading the masses of men leading lives of quiet desperation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm looking at my life, and before that period of my life, I had been like a youth leader, and I'm looking back at all these kids that I had led that are now adults, and they're dying of heroin overdoses. They're going to jail for crimes against kids. Their marriages are falling apart. They're in trouble with the law for all kinds of things. And I'm like, did I screw them up? Did I do something wrong? And I'm also looking at my life. And I, at that time, my dad was alive, and I had this great source of love and guidance and wisdom in my life. And all these other kids didn't have that.
Right.
You know, and I'm recognizing I have a responsibility to share the things that my dad had taught and was teaching me. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was the stuff that really kind of motivated me to start Manlyhood. I said, I want to pass this along. And it started as a blog, and then it kind of grew into the podcast.
Yeah.
And I just started kind of putting that out there, and just, you know, creating a place for men to build connections.
Right.
You know, like I had a lot of, like, I'd connect with guys at the church. You know, we'd connect in a group of guys where we could just be real and mm-hmm. have conversations about the things we were struggling with, or things. Sometimes we might talk about the Bible because it was church, but most of the times it was like, hey, you know, I'm going through this. Mm-hmm. I need some help. I need some support. How do I deal with my wife who's freaking out about this? You know,
right.
How do I deal with my kids who are going through this? And I recognized like that kind of community, that kind of brotherhood, mm-hmm. that place to talk about the fact that, you know, the one guy was like, dude, like every day I get up, I want to put a bullet in my head.
Yeah.
He had nobody to talk to about that. Nowhere to share that. And most guys, maybe they're not struggling with suicidal thoughts, but most guys have nowhere to share.
Exactly.
What they're going through.
Because there was this point, I think, too, that, you know, society put on, I think masculinity is important, but there is a toxic version of this. And part of that toxic masculinity was, you know, you can't feel things, you can't talk about things, you can't share things, like you have to just man up. And I don't think that was fair. I don't think that was a fair, you know, I feel like it was just generations that was kind of just put on, you know, because grandpa wasn't talking about his feelings, you know what I mean?
So. Well, it's like, so I let me talk about that real quick. I agree with the concept that we call toxic masculinity, right? Mm-hmm. I don't like the word toxic masculinity because it's become a buzzword. And so people use that phrase so much in culture now that people don't talk about masculinity without the word toxic in front of it. And now anytime we see an expression of masculinity,
people
just
freak
assume
out.
It's toxic, right? Yeah, and that's a problem too.
It is very much a problem.
So,
I agree.
So now positive masculinity just gets associated with toxic now.
Yeah.
So that is a problem. But the concept of toxic masculinity where, mm-hmm. where you can't talk about what you're going through, that concept is real. I wish we could call, that's just toxic, whether it's masculinity or not.
Yeah,
toxic,
of course.
Everything. Mm-hmm. Women have to be able to talk about what they're going through too. So just that toxicness, that toxicity is bad, whether it's mm-hmm. masculine or feminine, that's bad. But yes, I agree with the concept. And at the same time, the idea of man up or woman up or whatever, mm-hmm. there's also a degree of it where sometimes you have to, right? Yep. Sometimes you have to say, I feel like crap. I don't want
to
do
this. But you have to do the things anyway.
And I have to do the thing. Mm-hmm. And so there's like this balance of, you know what? I want to put a bullet in my head today, but I have to not.
Right.
I don't want to get out of bed and do the thing today, but I have to. I don't want to be married to my wife today because she's being a pain in the butt. Well,
yeah.
Guess what? You know how you have a great marriage? You stay married.
Right.
You know what I mean? You work through it. You talk about your problems. You go to counseling. You put in the effort when it's hard, you know? And then when it's good, you still put in the effort so that when it's hard, you have that love built up. You fill up that love bank so that you can work through that issues when it's hard. You know, I say that because sometimes life is not easy and sometimes it's hard. But yes, you have to be able to have we have to have that safety and that security of being able to talk about the things we're feeling and the things we're going through. And, you know, it's like toughness is not masculinity, right? Bravado is not masculinity. I think bravado is like false confidence. You're not going to win by pretending to be manly.
Right. You know?
But at the same time, there is something about drumming it up in you and saying, you know what, I can, like there may be a task in front of you that you literally can't do. But when you tell yourself, I can do this, I can do this, you can drum up the strength to do it. Like, so it's
right.
Again, it's that like teeter totter of, too much of it is a bad thing, but some of it works, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, no, it does. And I think that's how we all navigate through life, is that I wouldn't even call it balance. I mean, that's genuinely just life. We know too much of anything is not great for us. And if we're not even making an effort, if we're not moving the needle, that's not great either. So it is about just taking that step forward. What is your perspective now? How do you think, you know, as a whole, because obviously we just kind of touched on that about how masculinity is like the buzzword, right? Like it's, what are they talking about? How do you think we bring that back into our culture? Because I feel like there's a pretty heavy tip of the scale in the opposite direction where, you know, masculinity itself has, you know, the light is dying in how in some people.
Yeah. I think first of all, we have to say, okay, so I know like right now Star Wars is a bad example of masculinity. especially like as the Acolyte is coming out and after episode 3 of the Acolyte and everybody's like freaking out. By the way, episode 4 of the Acolyte was like, okay, this feels like Star Wars again. But like episode 3 was like this like woke nightmare. But anyway, you know, but I think back to this, there was this line in the trilogies, like the Force Awakens trilogies where the one character says there's more of us than there is of them, you know?
Yeah.
But when you turn on the news and you turn on social media, the loudest and the ugliest always gets the attention.
Yeah.
Right. There's more normal people in the world than there is the freaks and the weirdos and the people pushing all the nonsense.
The mental ill running amok are getting the spotlight. So it seems like it's bigger than it is.
Yeah. There's more normal people in the world. In fact, like even amongst the people who, so like I'm pretty conservative when it comes to politics and religion and my view of the world.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's my position on things. At the same time, I'm also pretty accepting of people that I disagree with, right?
Of course.
I have friends who are across the aisle from me on pretty much everything, right?
Yeah.
I have friends who have the opposite or have the same genitalia as me, but wear the opposite clothing of me, right?
Right.
It's like that. You know what I mean? And we have opposite views on a lot of things, but I treat them with love and respect, even though I think they're very wrong, right?
Right. Right.
So, you know, like, and I think that we can have that in existence in the world. We can have
of
that
course.
Kind of peace, right? But You know, and what they might define as normal, I would define as something different.
Right.
But
how is that something, Josh? Because, you know, I'm going through, I've read the Bible a few times. I'm in a different place this year, and I've been going through, you know, committed to reading it every day to get it done in a year again. And knowing who I am and how many times I strayed away from God, all of the words are different to me this time. Like everything is different. And I see a whole different perspective of like, we're not called to, you know, judge, right? Like that's not our job. We are called to love, but there also has to be a level of honesty, like in saying like, you know, what I think you're doing is wrong. So how do you find that balance, not only with the people in your life that, you know, you don't agree with, but like, how do you raise your kids like that in a way that, you know, they can be accepting, but know that like, hey, for us, this is not okay. How do you rock that balance?
So I would say this, like, I'll tell this story. So when my, I had a friend who came out to me as gay and we grew up together and, you know, I have a traditional view on sexuality.
Yeah.
Right. That's the way I would define. I believe that sexuality is for a man and a woman. That's actually a married man and a married woman. I believe that's how that's supposed to work. I don't hate anybody who sees it differently. I think that's the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
And he came out to gay, came out to me as gay. Now my, when he did, I told him this. I said, I need you to understand that this is how I interpret the scripture. This is what I believe that it means. I don't believe that you were born this way. I believe that you were born like I was born as someone who chooses the wrong things. We were all born to choose the wrong things. So I don't believe that, you know, that this is something that you have no choice in the matter of.
Right.
However, you know, I recognize that you may see it differently.
Yeah.
I recognize that you disagree with me. If push comes to shove, you don't answer to me, you answer to God.
Right.
And at the end of the day, I've told you what I believe on it, and you have the responsibility to take that and do with what you want. But as far as it comes between you and I don't need to tell you what I think about it anymore. I've told you, and it shouldn't come between us again. And if it does, I need you to be patient with me because I don't mean it in a way that hurts you. And if I ever say anything that offends you, let me know, because I'm new to navigating this. Do you know what I mean? And you know, like a week later, I like called something that was stupid gay.
Gay.
He laughed at me and he goes, oh dude, it's okay. We say that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's been, you know, we have a good relationship and a good friendship. I think like he had a little bit of a like crazy streak after the Trump election, and like unfriended me and then came back. He's like, I don't know what I was thinking. I was being an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, I think that we tend, and he's a man who claims to believe in Jesus, follows the Lord, actually, you know, like talks. And when he talks about his relationship with the Lord, who am I to say that he doesn't have one?
Right. Right.
So, and I see fruit in his life. I see evidence in his life. Yeah. Are there things that I disagree with? Yes. Like I said, he answers to the Lord and not to me.
Right.
And I don't believe I'm wrong about that issue.
Right.
But so I think that's the, you know, and you know what? And we're friends and we're close friends. And if he needed me, I'd be there in a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
You know,
I mean, and that is our job. That's our job to, you know, love without judgment and let people feel accepted and let people understand like the world is a shit show. We're all just navigating. Like I tell my listeners all the time, we're in the arena. Like nobody, I know social media puts out this whole thing. It's like, Anytime you get on an electronic device, you're seeing the very opposite ends of the spectrum, right? We're getting, you know, the lies and the BS from the news, which I encourage people to just don't bother. Or we're going on social media where we see everything's perfect. These lives of, you know, these fabricated lives of just perfect existence. And that is not real life. I love that, you know, you've got a place where especially men can land, where they can see like, this is real life. This is real life. We're going to struggle in our lives. We're going to struggle in our jobs. We're going to struggle in our relationships. But moving that needle forward and empowering, you know, other people just to be that beacon. I feel like, you know, I do think there's extreme cases where I wouldn't be able to stay friends with someone.
Sure.
But
well, and
as
I'll be
a
honest,
whole, yeah.
I'll be honest with you. There are men where I've had to say, hey, look, we're done. You know,
yeah.
And it's usually when it's a personal offense. Uh-huh. where they've gone too far, you know, or like constantly created arguments between us. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm not going to hear an example. I told you that my wife's a pastor.
Yeah.
All right. My wife's a pastor. I understand that some people read the scripture and they'll take one verse of scripture and not
make it
compare
with
it to the rest of scripture. And when you look at the historical context of that verse, mm-hmm. and the specific context of the church it was written to, and you ignore the rest of the scripture and don't look at it all as a whole,
right?
You could say women shouldn't be pastors, and you don't look at all of it and you see a different picture, right? And he wants to argue that and argue that and argue that and argue that. I'm like, I'm not gonna argue about this anymore. And he keeps going, you know what, dude, I don't need you in my life.
Right. Absolutely.
I love you, and I'm gonna love you from a distance. I'll see you later. Like, if you,
absolutely,
I don't have time to argue with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I just don't have time for that. I'll see you later.
Do you kind of get the guys to, this is something that I have had to set boundaries on, because when you kind of open up your door to be a landing space for people, you'll get the habitual offenders, the people that just want to complain about their lives. They're the victim and they don't choose another way. I have hardened my heart a little to that, because there has to be a point where you're making the effort. Like,
I have found that they, here's, I don't, I, okay. A lot of times women will do that more. Men, when you speak the hard truth to them,
mm-hmm.
like when they open up and you speak the hard truth to them, they either respond to it and say, you're right, I need to change, or they're done. Or they're like, they're offended, and then they're out.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, no, he didn't listen to me, and I'm done. I don't want to hear that again. And they like, because I mean, dude, I've done it.
Mm-hmm.
I've opened up and I felt like the victim, and I've been like, I'm like, I don't want to talk to that person again because I know what he's going to tell me.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean?
People
I've done it.
The truth. Absolutely.
I mean, I know some women who've done it too, but just typically, maybe it goes back and forth, and maybe it's both ways, but I've just experienced like when the men come around and they start the whining, right?
Yeah.
If I'm like, hey, look, have you thought about this? Or maybe you should do this. Sometimes they'll go back and forth and give the excuses. But then once you kind of just tell them like your problem here is that you need to mature and you
mm-hmm.
need to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not going to get a job, you're not going to grow, and you need to, you know, marry that woman that you're shacking up with and show that
mm-hmm.
you're committed to her instead of just, you know, expecting your baby mama to, you know, be your baby mama forever and expecting the drama to go away. Or you need to move out because it's nothing but drama. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, you know, and you need to start going to meetings and stop doing the drugs, you know, and then you don't hear from them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then they ghost you because you told them
right.
what they didn't want to hear. Or they respond. Or they'll leave, and then sometimes you planted that seed and they stew on it and they stew on it, and then they let it sink in, and that seed will grow, and they'll come back around like, you know what? You told me what I didn't want to hear, and it took about 2 years, but I, you know what? It reverberated in my head.
Right.
And it came, you know, we did this. I love it when things happen like sometimes like I put my stuff out there, right? I record this podcast and, you know, I get listeners, but like guys don't give a lot of feedback. We don't get a lot of feedback, you
Yeah.
know, like I can, like at my job, I can do a really good job,
Yeah.
really good job. And nobody says anything.
Right.
You know, I can, you know, I can do the dishes at home, you know, and like, you don't, nobody notices. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
it needs to get done, you know, and I think guys
Yeah.
crave the feedback, but we just don't get it, you know? So it
Yeah.
is what it is, you know? And so every now and then somebody will say something. So we were at this event, I was sitting there, I was like handing something out, and it wasn't related to manlyhood at all. And this guy walks up and he goes, "Hey, you, I've been seeing your videos on the internet. I just wanted to thank you, man. You've been changing my life." And I'm like, I started crying. I'm like,
Yeah.
this random guy walked up, like he's been watching, like that just was awesome. Like it, okay, all right, I'll keep going, you know?
Yeah. That's definitely what keeps Listen Bitch hanging on, is that, I think people don't understand the commitment and the dedication and the effort it takes to have a podcast. And then if you're like me, you're struggling with technology issues this week. I've had one episode that got uploaded this week out of five for the week. You go through those issues, and sometimes it's just like,
Why do it?
why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? Because it costs money. This is out of pocket for me. Like, I pay to have this, right? But I do have some incredible listeners that are very supportive, and I mean, women get validation, I feel like, a lot. At least I've magnetized myself to be that person that, that's what kind of feeds my soul, is every day there's one person that's like, thank you so much. Thank you for what you're doing. So I never realized that men don't really probably get that same feedback. You don't think about that. You go, I've got myself and my kids in the habit of, like, if we go somewhere, we compliment someone, like, oh my gosh, I love your hair. And it's always another woman, right? I've never like complimented a dude or anything like that. So it's,
I'm
I
telling
know
you right
women
now.
kind of calibrate to that.
I'm telling you right now, if you're listening to this and you see a guy and his hair looks nice, tell him his hair
Say
looks
something.
nice.
Yeah.
If you like, I got a compliment on a shirt. I have a shirt that I wear that's
Yeah.
it's got my manlyhood logo like this, but
Nice.
instead of the regular manlyhood logo, it's like built around the Gadsden flag, so it's got like the rattlesnake, and then the
Okay.
back says "Don't tread, bro."
Yeah.
You know, and I live in a pretty conservative libertarian-ish area.
Yeah.
And this lady goes, "I really like your shirt."
Oh
And
boy.
I'm like, okay, yeah. But
It's
I don't hear that a lot. Do you know what I mean?
funny because I'm going to tell you, my husband is very strong in his political beliefs. So when he's wearing, he's got flags on his truck, he's got people that are waving and honking, like, I
There
love
you
the
go.
flag, dude. And then other people trying to run him off the road. So it's that balance of, and he does, when we go places, he gets a lot of compliments on some political shirts he wears. So I love that. I feel like, I mean, I know, I'll just say my, I make it a point because words of affirmation are my love language. I do say these things to my husband. I say things out loud all the time. So, I like that his cup could be full, but I'll definitely take note of, being in that space of, like, men need to be complimented too. They want that validation.
I don't remember where I was, but this guy walked by with a really nice beard, and
Yeah.
I was with another friend, and who didn't have a beard, and this was like, "Dude, your beard is awesome," and like the other guy like stopped and he turned around and he blushed and then he just grinned from ear to ear,
Oh
and
yeah,
I'm
made his
like, you
day.
could just tell, like, I don't think anybody had complimented his beard, and
Yeah.
I'm like it made his day, and I'm like, you know what? I think we just need to do that more. We need to be
Yeah.
kind. And I know that, like, especially guys need it. I'm sure women need it
Yeah.
too, but I think they might get it a little more.
That's what I'm saying. I can say, because it, especially with my kids, I watch them do the same thing. And like, even in that sense of ignorance, like, someone will have the worst hair I've ever seen, and my daughter's like, I love your hair, it's so pretty. Like, they've just become robotic kind of with it, but it's always to women. Like, I don't even recall the last time I've complimented a dude in public that wasn't my husband. And maybe that's just kind of my, like, you know, conservative. Like, I don't know. I don't know why I don't do that.
Well, you said your love language is well, you words. Know, and there is a,
yeah.
It's also too, like, there's a, especially commenting on appearance, it can be misconstrued as flirtation.
Right. And I'm very strong line in that.
Yeah. It's well, and that can also, you don't want to draw that unnecessary attention back to yourself either. So
right.
So you want to be careful how you do it, because right. you know, you don't want to draw attention back to yourself. That's going to make you have to defend yourself or make yourself have to
right.
walk out of the restaurant with your keys between your knuckles. You know what I mean?
Right.
Kind mm-hmm. of nonsense. So I understand that too, like that, which should never happen. That actually is another toxic masculinity that always irritates the crap out of me when I see guys being creepy. There are stories that I hear about that, and this, it's the stuff that blows my mind that oh, I yeah. hear about. When I hear about the things that women have to put up with
mm-hmm.
that I just don't understand. I can't fathom it. I mean,
well, and then you've got, again, social media glorifying, you know, just how women are treated. I literally saw a clip this morning. I'm going through, I scroll through TikTok doing, we'll call it research, and I come across random videos, and it's this guy on a podcast literally asking this dude if he wants to hook up with his wife. And you can see she's like not comfortable. She's like, she's just not comfortable. And I'm thinking, dude, she's not, you don't just pass her off to another dude. Like, it broke my heart. But that's the shit that's on the internet. And it's really, you know, it just kind of.
Well, it's
people that's become desensitized to the respect and.
It's the porn culture that we're in, which
yeah.
is I'm a conservative, traditional Christian value in my view on sexuality. Might people look at me and say I'm a prude, but there's a reason that
right.
like we're not animals, and yeah. our sexuality is not meant to be like a buck with
exploited.
A harem of does.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, where we just go mm-hmm. and we just, you know, mm-hmm. hit whatever we can hit and make mm-hmm. whatever we can make. Like, no, like we are designed to treat mm-hmm. each other with respect and mm-hmm. with love and with honor. And when you mm-hmm. apply that to a relationship, it blooms and it blossoms and it grows and it mm-hmm. produces family and it yep. produces, you know, a long-term committed relationship that is a glorious and a beautiful thing. And when we cheapen it, it creates bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And the sexual revolution was the worst possible thing that happened to this culture. And yep. We're starting to see, you know, the horrible fruits of it now. Mm-hmm. And now we're at the place where we're actually having the opposite happen
yeah.
because we've got people not having sex at all because
exactly.
they're scared to death. And we've got young men and young women not even leaving their rooms
yep.
because they don't know how to have, they're not even
human.
Dating.
Yeah, exactly.
And then because they're just watching porn, and then the only relationships they ever have, if they do have anything, it ends up being rape because they don't know how to relate with
they
people.
Don't know exactly. Yep.
It's horrible. Horrible.
It is.
Yeah. It's time, I think, that we start like actually looking at maybe there is a design here, right?
I mean, it's very clear to, I think, a lot of people. What I don't understand is like, we can see that. And then how do we communicate that into things that have the power right now? Because, you know, I feel like it is a battle for the soul. The devil has a stronghold. He's got his foot he's in everything. So, you know, how do we, the people that get it, how do we, you know, translate that into something that's active outside of like, you know, I tell my listeners the most important thing you can do is get your house in order. Like, we can't do anything about who's running our country. We can't do anything about what other countries are going to do to us. There's a lot of things we don't have control over, but we can start with our kids. And that's, I love that your podcast, you know, especially coming from a place for men, is it brings in that manlihood, because you guys do set the tone. You're you are the king. You're meant to be the king. And I think getting back to that and working on our kids and how our kids are going to interact with society and their perspectives, I mean, that's where we start. But then what's after that? We get our houses in order. You know, my kids know my beliefs. They know, you know, what I believe God expects from us. They know that our job every day is to step into our potential, to be the best version that God brought us in here to be. They know that. So then if I were to go outside of that to make an impact or to make change in the world effectively, what do you suggest people are doing?
So I believe that it comes down to, first of all, we need to love God, right? Like that's what our purpose is. Like, that's why we're made, you know? I mean, you know, and I don't want to make it clear too, like, manlyhood, like, and what I do there, it's not a Christian podcast. Not all my guests are Christians. I don't only talk about God. I don't censor people when they talk about God. And sometimes I do talk about God a little, you know, it's important to me. It informs the work that I do, but that's not the only thing we talk about. And, you know, and I can tell your podcast is that way too. Like, it's, let's talk and see, and it's going to come up because that's the way that you think, you know, So, but I think as we're asking this question, you know, like, yeah, I believe that as we ask that question of purpose, why am I here? Why do I exist? God made me. That's why I'm here. And he made me for a purpose. And that purpose is to love him. Like, he made me and he gave me a choice. I can love him or I cannot love him because he's good. Like, if he made me and I had no choice, he wouldn't be good. He gave me the choice to love him. And so that's the purpose he created me for. And I can choose to be in alignment with that purpose or not be in alignment with that purpose. And I mean, that is the greatest commandment, to love God. Then love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind and all your strength. And the second commandment is a lot like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Right. And so if that's the next step that you're taking out. And I think that when we show people that compassion, when we show people, we're then reflecting that love of God to other people, because they cannot understand the way that God loves them until they see it reflected in you. And I think that a lot of times Christians in particular have been more concerned about being right and more concerned about a political agenda.
Yeah.
They've been more concerned about their theology, and they've been more concerned about power. You know, we've been watching that show, 1923, which is like one of the Yellowstone shows, which, and it's showing, like the Indian schools run by the Catholic Church. And, I just get so pissed off.
Yeah.
Watching what was done to those natives
Name
of converting them to Christianity. And like, that's not love. That's not right. That wasn't what those people were doing, was not Christian. And I'm not condemning people who call themselves Catholics, because I believe that you can be a Catholic and love Jesus, right? I'm not condemning that.
Right.
But whatever those people were doing was not Christian. So I would say that they are not Christian, because that's not Christian, right?
Right.
But I see that kind of behavior, and it just, like, we have not always got it right.
Right.
Do we look like Jesus? Do we show people that love?
Right.
Do we reflect God? And if we're not, then, you know, like, I do we?
I'm in my Jesus era of flipping over tables. Let's just say that I'm in the Jesus era of flipping
over tables. Why did he do that? Do you know why he did that?
Yeah, I was just disappointed. It was just that his heart was broken, man.
And why? So let's look at, I love this story, because a lot of people don't. So the temple, where were the tables that the money changers set up? Where were they set up at? Do you remember?
In the temple.
In the temple. What part of the temple?
The entrance?
They were in the outer courts. So
okay.
the The temple had outer courts and inner courts, and
Okay.
then you had the part of the temple that the priests were in, where the sacrifice were made. Then you had the
Yeah.
Holy of Holies. So the Jewish people would come, and they could go into the inner courts, and they would come in the inner courts. They would bring their sacrifices to the priests, who would then go into the places where the sacrifices were made. They would make the sacrifice. They would go in the Holy of Holies, sprinkle the blood.
Yeah.
And the Jewish people would have their sins forgiven. Now, God was a God for all people, but the Jewish people had that personal relationship with him. But there was also a place where Gentiles could also worship that God. That place was the outer courts.
Okay.
So that's like the place, like where the Wailing Wall was, like so they would come there. And like Gentiles can still go to the Wailing Wall now, and they can actually pray there. And
Oh,
so that place where Jesus went and turned over the tables was supposed to also be a place of worship. And that was the place where, like, so they were set up there, and they were doing evil because they were charging too much.
Right.
Right. They were charging too much. It wasn't wrong for them to set up outside of the temple.
Right.
And to say, because people were coming from a long journey away, and they had to be able to buy animals and to be able to bring a sacrifice. Because if they would have taken a sheep from all the way across, right, the sheep would have died on the journey.
Of course.
So they had to be able to buy animals. So it wasn't wrong that they were selling animals there. It was that they were overcharging, and they were changing money for all the people coming to town. And they were cheating people, so they were stealing. But they set up in the area that was inside of the outer courts where the Gentiles were able to worship.
Yeah.
So that would be like setting up inside of a part of the sanctuary where people were supposed to be worshiping and cheating people. Yeah. So like, yeah, it was dishonest. It was sin, and it was keeping people that God loved, but the Jewish people didn't love from being able to worship God. I just point that out because a lot of people are like, well, they were in the temple. Yeah. But they were excluding people.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what they were doing. Not only were they cheating people, but they were excluding people. Like, he wasn't pissed that they were selling sheep. He was pissed that they were pushing people out.
Right.
You know, because like, you know, on Sunday morning, your church or if you have a church on Sunday morning, I mean, heck, I think you can gather in your living room on Friday night, and that's also a church. Right? I don't care where you're gather at the coffee shop on Wednesday afternoon. I don't care. As long as you're gathered and you're worshiping God in some way. But in that group, you need to be able to have, all people need to have access to that. Unbelievers need to have access to that. They need to be welcome. People that don't know God but want to know him need to have access to that. I didn't mean to get all preachy on your podcast.
No, today. It's
Sorry,
great.
I hope that's
you got,
okay.
I'm telling you, Josh, I am so, we go off the walls. Like,
okay.
It's fine. We go from one extent to the other. So
good. I don't always,
no,
have,
I love this.
And I don't actually always have time to talk about all this stuff. So this is kind of good to be able to talk about this stuff. So
no, I love it. I love it. And people got a lesson, and my whole thing is, you know, flipping over the tables is just like, you know, kind of with the, I have six kids, man. I go grocery shopping and I feel that. I'm like, what is happening right now? And just this level of, you know,
injustice.
Sure. We're being robbed. Like, we're being robbed with taxes. I get paying taxes. Like, let's pay some state taxes. That's our job. We're called to give to Caesar what is Caesar's. But, you know, I would like to flip some government tables and just talk about mishandling of money.
Have you been
times
following,
we're taxed.
Have you been following the Idaho thing?
No, what's happening in Idaho?
Okay, you told me you're a TikToker and you've been following stuff. So, Idaho.
Okay.
There is no water shortage in Idaho, right?
Okay.
All of the aquifers and wells are full.
So they're saying there's a shortage of water. Someone is saying that. Is that what?
Nope. But what they are saying is that they're telling the farmers that they can't use the, they can't turn on the water to water their crops.
See, I'd go flip some tables there.
They're not explaining why. They're just saying you can't do it. And the farmers are saying, if we can't water these crops, we will lose the crops.
Right.
And there's
Naturally.
not a clear reasoning why. And they tried to explain it, and it's not, they're like, I think they tried to say there was something about some kind of water shortage or issue, or there's not enough water for this if we do this, kind of one of those things. But there's no issues. And simultaneously, they've found lithium and cadmium or some other precious metals in Idaho. And the companies that have found it have been invested in by all of the senators and state senators in Idaho. They've invested in these companies. And so, and the people on the, like the ag boards that are telling them not to.
Yeah.
So there's questions about, are you guys trying to take these, are you trying to get the crops to fail so the farmers loot the farms?
Right.
That's the question. I mean, a lot of that's conspiracy theory, but the problem is,
I wear a tinfoil hat. Everybody knows it.
So much. Like, people don't realize how much American crop, like if the Idaho crop fails,
that's a lot.
We're talking snowball.
Yeah.
Snowball effect.
That's your French fries in every restaurant, honey. You're done. Like,
I'm telling you what, the farm economy, people don't recognize how much our, that whole system has been subsidized for so long, for so long. And then they've cut all these corners. Then these big corporations come in and then they, you know, lobby to get all the power to,
they like, played a long game.
It is such a mess. And then now you've got China
buying land, and that's terrifying.
And buying, you know, they own all the pork processing now. So now all this, the pork and the chicken is being shipped overseas to be slaughtered and processed and then shipped back. And like,
that's not sketch. That's not sketchy at all.
Like I just, it's time to start like just buying all of your food from a local farmer. Like we've got a bunch of Amish farms here. I'm just going to start talking to them. Like,
that's the way to go.
Something's not right.
Yeah. It's sketch. You guys need to do your research, and I don't want you walking around blindly. I don't, you know, you're not going to find the answers on the news. You're just not, you know, for whatever reason. That's a business. That's a business, you know. Media is a business, so it's always going to be what they can spend to make the most money, fill the most pockets. Like, you know, the same, I feel the same about big pharma. It's just a business, but
media is a business, but it's also an arm of the federal government. But that's another story.
Yes.
I worked as a journalist for years, in local media, which is a different market, but national media is, I've done a lot of deep diving and read, dude, you realize, people don't realize this, but like, the CIA and the FBI have like both of their websites have what's called a vault, which is like all their declassified files. And you can go and read them. Like, now a lot of them are heavily redacted, but you can read a lot of information about operations that they did from like the beginning of their organizations all the way up until like
to now.
And when you read what they've actually done, that they're actually willing to tell you they've done.
Yeah.
Like they're in control of what exactly goes out.
Yeah.
They admit
for
it.
Sure.
So
for sure. It's scary. I mean, we definitely, I think as a whole, just need that change, and that's it. Raising our babies to do the right thing, impressing upon our kids to raise our grandkids to do the same, of just like, take back our power of we the people, you know. There's no accountability anymore. I feel like that's why people are just out here, you know, raping kids in the street, man. Like, there's no accountability. What happens to them? You're gonna get three hots in a cot? That's not fair. I feel like corporal punishment, like, let's just
that's something.
It's
back in 2016 when that election was happening and the world was like, everybody was like hating. Like, it just, that's when like all this division really started.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like all of my friends, because I've always had friends on both sides, right?
Oh, yeah.
Back then, the sides were like this. They were like barely, And then all of a sudden it was just like everybody hated everybody.
Yeah.
And I just,
that was their plan.
It really got to me. And I had this crazy hippie friend. He was like a musician. And I just kind of commented on it one day, like, this, all this division is just getting me. Like, I'm so sick of it. And he just said, "Hey man, just plant your garden, love your kids, take care of your neighbors, and worry about what you can worry about. Don't worry about anybody else." And like, I've tried to live that as my mantra. Like, and like, when you focus on what's around you, like, what can you take care of?
Right.
What, you know, and I think like that's when I focused on my circle and then gradually started making my circle bigger.
Yeah.
Right. You know, that was when I started the podcast and I started reaching out to a larger circle and started influencing a larger circle of people and recognizing that, you know, and now my kids are grown and they have larger circles. And so like, and I see them influencing people and spreading that, the things that I've taught them, and seeing that spread out and recognizing, okay, the values that I taught them and the men that I've reached are now helping other men, and like seeing that spread out that way, you know, and seeing it from that perspective, I think helps me to see that, you know what? So what, like, God never promised us a nice, clean American life. You know what I
not
mean?
Not here. No,
our
promise is on the other side of this. We,
you know,
we signed up for a shit show.
What they were enduring when Jesus was here was a mess. And somewhere along the line, we Americans got this idea that we were going to have freedom of speech and freedom of religion and the right to bear arms and all of these things, which we should have. It's in our constitution, you know, and it's nice to have them. But the idea that we're guaranteed those, or that we will always have them, or that our system will always work.
Right.
Why not? It might fall apart.
Well, I mean, the Bible, right? The Bible tells us it's going to get worse. You know, we're going to see the worst of the worst. It's there. We know it's not getting better.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it might be nice if we had, you know, it might be nice if we get a reprieve and maybe we have, you know, 4 years of a president who does good, and, or a Congress who does good. And then it'll probably change and it'll get worse again. And then it might get better for a little bit. You know, who knows? Who knows?
Right.
But
and you don't, and that's it. Your friend is right. Like, what can you control? And that's why I say getting your house in order. It's part of, like, you know, my husband used to get really angry with politics. Like, I thought he was going to have a heart attack. Like, he'd be very angry. And I'm like, we cannot get him. It's the same thing. Like, we're Bears fans. Okay. I married into Bears fans. It's every time you watch them, you lose like a year of your life because they never do what you want them to do. And you're just like so passionate and emotional, like it's hard on your body, literally. So we literally, I mean, we stopped watching, you know, football, because we were just too, it's not a healthy relationship, you know? But it's the same thing with politics of just like anything that's going on. Like we can't control, there's nothing we can do to hold anyone accountable. You know, I do feel like people have gotten away with mass murder right in front of our face. I feel like a lot of wrongs have been done, and I'm at peace with knowing like they're going to face judgment. That's not on me. Like, I know we may not get to see what happens to them in this lifetime, but I know something's coming. Like, nobody gets away with being that evil. Nobody. You know, all these islands, whatever, I'm sure there's hundreds of Epstein islands, you know, around the world. People aren't going to get away with that. We may not get to see it, but you have to detach from that and understand, like, the most important thing is that your kids grow up and they have safety and security, right? So he's pissed off about all these things, but he's not realizing what his anger is doing to the family. Part of that self-awareness of realizing, like,
I had to work through that too. Like, 2020, dude, did a number on me. That was the year that my wife became a pastor. And then like 3 months after that, 2020 hit, and working through that was, because like everybody, like it was like, as a, like, no matter what decision she made, she pissed somebody off.
Oh, of course.
And so then all that pressure, And then I'm the only guy that knows anything about how to stream and do video. So I had all that pressure. I was laid off from my job. So I had all that pressure. And then the government, and I'm in Pennsylvania, and we had, you know, while we live in a liberal, or I mean, a libertarian conservative area, like we're in a liberal blue state. And so they make all these horrible decisions. And like, I just kept getting madder.
I'm in Michigan. I got the horrible decisions.
Yeah, you understand that. Yeah. Yeah, they even tried to kidnap your governor, right? Was that the
one? Oh, poor her.
Yeah.
Poor her.
Yeah. Yeah. Then the federal government orchestrated it.
Exactly. Exactly. It was a
great story. That story is the funniest thing ever. I'm sorry.
And how do people forget that? Like, how do people just blow that off? And guess who's still hanging out in the seat, you know, who didn't get voted out? I'm just like, okay.
They feel bad for her.
Yeah, poor thing.
I bet she's like, I have an idea that'll get me reelected.
Yeah. Oh, think- Lord.
Hey, Washington, I have an idea. Anyway, yeah, I got so angry. I got so angry. And like, my wife was just like, honey, you need to get this under control. You need to get this under control. And, you know, it took like, what's funny though, and I know we're probably getting, I don't know how long you want to go for, but.
Oh, I have no time frame. If the conversation's going, we're good, unless you have to go, and that's fine too.
It's all good. So what's funny is during that time frame, I had to get to the place where like I was angry at all the stuff that was happening.
Yeah.
Right. And what I recognized and understood during that time frame, and when I really got down to it, is most of the time we're angry about what's right in front of us.
Yeah.
Like, you're watching the Chicago Bears. You're angry at the Chicago Bears, especially men. Anger is the emotion we know.
Oh,
That's the language that we have.
It's the default mode.
It's the language we have.
Yeah.
And when I really, really took the time to get into it, I recognized that I was grieving the loss of my dad.
Yep.
But I was also grieving the hurt of my childhood.
Yeah.
I was processing a lot of trauma. And like, I didn't understand that all of the surface stuff was just the trigger mechanisms for all the hurt on the inside. And like most guys can't have that conversation because they're so focused on all the tripwires on the surface.
Right.
And I think that's something that a lot of guys need to have some conversations about.
Yeah.
And we men are just not ready to go there.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a guy and you're listening to this, you need to go there.
Yeah.
Because you don't deal with your crap will deal with you.
Yeah.
You know, I actually had a heart attack.
Did you?
Because
you were a Bears fan?
No.
No, I'm just joking.
But I was shoveling you know, I had ADHD real bad. And so they gave me Adderall, and I was taking Adderall. I mean, I wasn't abusing it, but I was taking Adderall. And, so that would that made my heart speed up a little bit. And then I was treating my emotions with deep fried food.
Yeah.
And I felt sluggish all the time because I was eating like crap. So I would, you know, chug energy drinks to have energy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know what? My heart just couldn't take it.
No.
You know? And like, I had to slow down.
Yeah.
Now, fortunately, I actually had a miracle. You know, I go to the hospital. Like, I drove myself to the hospital. I call my wife, honey.
You're having a heart attack and you drove yourself to the hospital. That's pretty badass. Honey,
something's not right. I'm going to go to the hospital. I think I might be having a heart attack.
Yeah.
It was, you know, COVID's going on, so they wouldn't even let her back to the emergency room. But I drove myself to the hospital. They do the blood test, and troponin is released, which is the enzyme that shows that you're having a heart attack.
Okay.
We live in the sticks, you know, and so that we don't have a cardiac lab here. We're going to send you to, they send me up to the ICU for a while for observation. And they're like, all right, we're going to send you to, and I got worse, you know, and we're going to send you to Erie, Pennsylvania, where the cardiac lab is.
Yeah.
So that's like, you know, like a 90-minute ambulance ride. And I get up there and they do a heart cath. and there was no damage. And so they tried to say, well, you just had a heart spasm.
Yeah.
From the energy drink and the Adderall. And I'm like, I said, well, that could make sense, but would troponin be released with that?
Yeah.
Well, that's the one thing we can't quite understand. So the other option is all my friends that started praying for me, prayed for me, and God healed my heart.
In the yeah.
Middle of my heart. Well, I mean, I don't know if that really explains it for us. I'm like, okay, well, it explains enough for me.
Yeah, that's all I would need. And I've always been that person. Like, I'm telling you, that has always been my thing. I'm like, nope, we're fine. God has it. I don't need that surgery. I'm good. He's got it.
But after that, I did have high blood pressure. So I take some high blood pressure medicine, but I think I started really doing the work on, and it's taken me some time. I'm still doing the work on that I need to do, but I'm really trying to get to the root of that, that emotional pain. I started it then, and I'm still, kind of recognizing and understanding why I use food to treat that hurt, you know, and doing a lot better now, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, that's a really, really, it's been a really deep struggle for me, just like that whole, for a long time, just that, you know, well, when we were first married, honestly, like I struggled with porn and
yeah,
almost lost my marriage twice. And
yeah,
I think I just traded porn for food.
Yep.
And it took a while to really, you know, understand that that's why I ballooned up 200 pounds.
Yeah.
When we got married.
Right. That would happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so I'm working on changing that and working real hard. And I'm down like 50 pounds in the past year.
Oh yeah. Nice, yeah, man.
Getting that under control, and I'll get back to where I need to be. I'll be back to fighting weight soon.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's a process. And I think the minute we stop acknowledging, I was just having this conversation last night. The minute we stop acknowledging that we have shit to work on, what's the point? Like, what is the point? I don't think we ever get to a, you know, that idea of perfection. I feel like there's always room to grow. There's always ways to improve. And I think as a human species, we have that addictive personality. I don't care who you are. Everybody has something. And we've spent our entire lives looking for something outside of ourselves. When really, it, you know, I'm telling people now, it's Jesus, man. Like, it is realizing that he's inside of you and that everything you've ever had, ever needed, it's in you. And we're just so used to looking outside of ourselves. We look for food to make us feel better. We look for people to make us feel better. We look for, you know, we watch mindless TV shows to just not feel the things. And, you know, I do talk to my audience because I think I'm 80% women on this podcast that listen in. Last time I looked at the analytics, you know, I try to explain to them because a lot of people are like, you know, struggling in their relationships. And I think men and women are so different. And I think that's why we're meant to be together. You know, it's that balance of like, you know, I bring out the softer side. I give him that safe space, but it's that communication. I think we don't give our guys enough space. Like, we expect them to read our minds. We expect them to know what we want. We expect them to have their shit together. And then we could be the hot mess. And especially in marriage, I think it's give and take. I'm sure there's times where your wife has needed a minute to catch her breath and you've had to be the strong, have it together person. But it's about communicating, I think, between, especially in our relationships, of just like what we need in that moment. I had to stop putting that pressure on my husband. Like, it's not his job to make me happy. And us just realizing, you know, we had a toxic relationship with alcohol and he's navigating through things because that's not our crutch anymore. You know, when it's an instinct of just like, okay, this doesn't feel good. Let's hurry up and drink it away. Life is a party. Let's have fun. And it, you know, it was very toxic, hurt our kids in the process. And I feel like that's what life is always going to be like. We're processing feelings. The feelings are never going to stop coming. And when you realize you have that power inside you to do that, I think everything just kind of shifts, you know, and giving our guys that safe space to like get their shit together. You know, if your wife every day was like, it's your job to make me happy, you're never going to have space to get on the right track. you know? I don't know.
The happy wife, happy life thing is a lie anyway. Like, you're never going to make her happy. Like,
Benjamin, you did not hear that, okay? You did not hear that. It is happy wife, happy life, or I cut it off. No.
You said something that just kind of triggered a thought too, like, you know, about men and women being different, and it just kind of brought up something that I love, and I thought it was worth talking about. So, like, growing up in the church that I grew up in, like, I always remember, like, cause we were like I grew up in like a King James church.
Okay.
And it talks about, when God made Eve, and it says, like, she was God made her as a help meet for him. Right.
Yeah.
Like, they would always throw around the word help mate, and they would say, oh, she's such a help mate. And like, that's not what it says. It was a help meet for him.
Yeah.
And like, no, like, what does it mean? Right. And so like the Hebrew there is for the Hebrew help meet for him is Ezer Kenegato, which means, that she is made. And I say this cause you got a woman audience. Right. And I like this.
Yeah.
So Eve was made as a helper equal to him.
Mm-hmm.
She was made. And the only other place that this is used is like, as like a warrior equal to him. It's like a,
mm-hmm.
like a sparring partner,
mm-hmm.
with him. Like it's like a battle term, like a shield maiden.
Yeah.
Like she's meant to be like, you know,
and you're on the front lines, you know, right. Mom and dad, you're on the front lines as parents, you're on the front lines against the world. And that's, I think we forget sometimes that we're on the same team and that causes conflict. You know, we're on the same team. We're both getting our ass kicked, and that's where we are.
Yeah. I think that the, like the idea of, especially in the Bible, like there's, you know, it gets twisted out of context where it says, wives, submit yourself to your husband. Right.
Yeah.
And it should happen. It's important. Yeah. Also before that, it talks about what the husband's responsibility is. And it's actually even bigger because he's supposed to love her like Christ loved the church, which is sacrificially, like self-sacrificially.
Yeah.
And also, they're talking about the whole body of Christ is supposed to submit. We're all supposed to submit to each other.
Yes.
Which includes husband and wife submitting to each other with mutual love and respect. And, you know, I also hear frequently like the curse being cited, in regards to husband and wife relationships, as though it's supposed to be that way. Cause it talks about like the husbands will rule over her. Like, no, it's not supposed to be that way. He's saying that it will feel like that, and it's going to be like that, and it shouldn't, that's not what God wanted.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen, but it shouldn't feel like that.
Right.
And we have to fight against that curse. Right. Like, so, so like as you're working through things with your spouse, like recognize like, you're equals. And yes, I do believe that there is a leadership that a man brings to the table.
Yeah.
I think that there is that leadership there, but leadership isn't lordship. Leadership is stewardship. Leadership is relationship. Leadership is responsibility.
Yeah.
And my wife and I recognize that as leaders of our family, we lead together.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I'm the patriarch and she's the matriarch. And they are both leading, you know what I mean? I think that is how we need to approach things because, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, could I put my foot down and be like, this is the way that we're going to go and we're going to make this decision. I might have to do that.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it might be her that does that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And honestly, that give and take is how it works. And, you know, it's just as long as there's give and take and not all just take and take, we'll be okay.
Because that can be abusive. And I do think that, you know, there's abusive people out there, but I think the traditional, I mean, we definitely, my husband goes to work, I take care of the kids. Like it is, it is that he's in his element. You know, I'm in mine. Like, he doesn't have to worry about the babies. They're in really good hands. If this were flipped, it's not in his nature, who he is as a person. There's no way he could be a stay-at-home dad. Like, that is, he was meant to be out there in the battlefield.
And your role is just as important.
Yeah.
And just as valuable.
Oh my gosh. You know, we're both getting our ass kicked in the battle. We're definitely warriors for sure. So
what are they doing right now? Are your kids like tearing the house apart right now? How old are they?
My youngest is 5 and I have up to 22. My college girls are home. So,
okay. So that, yeah, yeah. You've got backup.
I have backup, and I don't know how you can't hear them. Cause I can hear them.
Dude, 22. So like, that's a pretty big spread.
Yeah, it's massive. We started over and it's fine. It worked out perfectly.
Yeah. So we had 4, we had twins on our 1 year wedding anniversary.
Nice.
Which was the 4th of July. And then we had another one and another little boy. So we had boy, girl, twins, another little boy, and he's 22. And then we have a 19-year-old who will be 20 in December. She's the one that just got married. So they're all out of the house now. And the twins each have kids. So, nice. So we're my grandpa. And yeah, they're, and so they were born in 99.
Okay.
So, and Shiloh got married on my birthday.
Nice.
And then, my son, the one of the twins got married on my wife's birthday. So apparently that's a tradition of everybody ruining each other's birthdays and anniversaries.
Yeah. That's the way to do it, man. That's the way to do it.
So
get married and have babies. That's fantastic.
So yeah, I love it. Grandbabies are the best though. I love that part.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I'm sad that I can't have more, but you know, I had my number 6 C-section and I just can't be on that table again. So yeah. I called it, but I'm a baby addict. There's just something, I am obsessed. I loved being pregnant. I loved like all of that experience, breastfeeding, like hands-on mom. I was it. But yeah, I miss it. So it's going to be a little different with grandkids of just not having that experience of,
it's,
you know,
better. It's so much better.
Cause you
it
can pass so them off, better. Right?
Yeah. So my brother is 5 years younger than me. So he's 41. I just turned 46. I think he's 41. His wife is 43. She just had a baby. And their oldest is 16. So they've got quite a spread too.
Nice.
But yeah, I'm like, there's no way that I could.
That you would start over.
There's no way. I could not handle it. No way.
Yeah, no, my husband would leave. I mean, if I even brought home a kitten at this point, that man is going to walk out the door. So I'm careful now. I'm cautious. Like, no stray animals, no nothing. We're good. I'm happy.
Grandbabies are so much better though. Yeah. I'm telling you, like, especially when they start talking.
Oh my gosh,
they're so much fun. So tell that 22-year-old, look, you need to find yourself a man. Bring me home some grandbabies because they are fun.
I know. I'm like excited, but I can wait. I can wait. I can wait. I still have a 5-year-old that, you know, consumes me. She's very much, God knew that's what I needed for my last kit, because she's a little firecracker and
awesome.
Very loving. I mean, still, I co-sleep with the babies. She's there. I get to snuggle her. That'll be the moment. I don't know what it's going to be like to be an empty nester. That's going to be a whole lot of emotional processing for me. So I'm telling my husband to prepare now, because I don't know who I'm going to be.
Well, that's a long time from now. So you've got time.
Yeah.
That's why I talk about your purpose.
Yeah.
And make sure that you fully understand your purpose, because it feels like your purpose is to be a mom.
Yeah.
That is not your purpose. That's your mission.
Right.
Your mission can change. Your mission will change all the time. You'll have many different missions in your life.
Yeah.
Your purpose is to love God.
Yeah.
And that will never change.
Yeah.
You're put on this earth to love God. You know, your purpose is not to be a marathon runner, because if you lose your leg and you can't run marathons, then you don't have a
purpose. You've lost a will to live. Yeah.
Yeah. Your purpose is to love God.
Yeah.
And so get rooted in that purpose and recognize that your missions can change.
I love the way you just put that. That is huge for me. A mission, a little side quest. What is the title of the book? Share that with people, because I think that right there is going to resonate a lot.
Yeah, it's called Core Ops. You can get it on Amazon. It's kind of centered around like the idea like that, like every military branch has like its core operation procedures. And then it like kind of uses that as an analogy to then kind of help you identify what your core ops are, your mission, your purpose, your mission, your vision, and your values. Kind of, it's really short. It's just a really short little handbook to kind of walk you through that purpose. That process, and you can kind of put that together. It's on Amazon.
Oh, you guys check that out. I'll make sure it's linked in the bio here, because I think that is something that perspective is great. That's a great perspective. And I have a lot of moms on here, and I'm always like, you have to find something outside of this. Your kids are not your life. We're not living vicariously through them. Like, you have to have your own life. And I struggled a lot when my girls went to college. They'd been with me every day since the day they were born. So then moving to the dorms, I was like, it was death for me. It was literally like,
I think it's harder with your first kids than it is your last ones, especially. So you still got another like 13 years before. Yeah. So by that point, you'll probably be ready.
Like I said, my husband's had their bags packed in his mind for a very long time. He's ready for it to be the two of us and just everybody get out. Probably going to change our address, not tell anybody where we went.
When Shiloh moved out, before she moved out. So Shiloh has like, she's always like the Stanley Cup girl. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And always had ice and uses all the ice. And never fills up the ice cube tray. Right?
I've got two of those.
And yeah. And like, like I am like, I need a lot of ice too. And I never had ice. And I would complain about it every day.
Yeah.
And so every time she was like, hey, I'm going to be moving out, get my apartment. And I'm like, and she's a, you know, she's a nail tech and she started her nail business. And
nice.
She's killing it, you know, before she married, she can pay for her apartment and she's doing great. She's famous. Everybody in the area knows her and talks about her.
I love that. Yeah.
She's freaking amazing. She's, you know, 19 and she's like a rock star, but you know, she moves out. I'm like, I'm going to be so glad because I'm going to have all the ice I want. And I call her and I'm like, Shiloh, I have a lot of ice in my house.
Oh, that's
no girl and no daughter.
I tell my husband all the time, I'm like, that stuff that annoys you so much, you're going to miss it one day.
Yeah.
You're going
to
miss it.
It's great to have ice, but it's horrible to have no daughter. So,
yeah. Yep. That's exactly what's going to be happening. He's going to be I think he'll probably be more lost than me, just because he's been so looking forward to it that when it finally does hit him, he's just going to be like a little lost puppy. I don't even know what I'm going to do with him. He'll be calling the kids every day like, hey, can I think I could come over? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's going to take it.
My wife has been really busy with work too. So I started a job where I work from home. So I'm home a lot alone.
Yeah.
So I talk to the dogs and it's been, I thought that I would like it more. I'm a little lonely, but I'll be all right.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll be good. It's fine.
I'll be all right.
It's fine. Josh, this was an awesome conversation. I appreciate your time today. I feel like we're going to have to circle back because just the conversation is really super easy. I learned some things. Like I love that. I love when I can have a conversation and walk away with like new perspectives. So, I appreciate your time. Everybody make sure you check out his manlyhood. Maybe you guys can check out his manlyhood. That did not sound appropriate. Check out the podcast. Okay. Yes. Check out the podcast. And maybe, you know, put it on your husband's phone. Let him get into some of that. Maybe he needs a community he could fall back on. But Josh, I just want to say thank you again. I appreciate your time. Anything you want to leave the audience with before we cut out today?
No, for sure. I appreciate you talking. If you ever want to talk again, my mom says I was vaccinated with a phonograph needle and I love to talk. So
nice. Anytime. Awesome. That's great. And listen, bitch, dream big. Life is too short to play small. Embrace who God called you to be. Own your shit and be brave as you step into your full potential as a co-creator. Until next time, love yourself in this moment. Brandon Lynette reminding you that you're a badass. We're in the arena. Keep swinging.